You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line are Omer Petty and Madge Woodward from Michigan. Folks, thanks for joining us today.
Well, you're welcome.
Oh, you're welcome. I think it's good of you to do it.
Thank you. Omer, I saw a story on the internet,
yeah.
The headline being, Seniors Get the TSA Runaround, Lose $300. Before I get into that, for the benefit of the listeners, just give them a little background about who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm a retired engineer. After retirement, I got into sculpting. I'm a sculptor. And let's see, I don't know what to tell you, actually.
Where are you from? Where were you born?
I was born here in Detroit, lived here all my life. Except for time I spent in the service. I was in the Air Force for about 5 years, came out as a major, so I'm a veteran of World War II.
Okay.
And I worked most of my life as an engineer for various companies, and then I went into business for myself and retired from my own business.
Okay.
In partnership with two other fellows.
Okay, and of course the Air Force was, I guess, the Army Air Corps back then, right?
That's right. Right. That's correct.
I guess it turned into the Air Force, I think, in 1947.
That's correct.
How old are you, Omer?
I'm 95 years old.
95. That's all? Just 95?
Yeah, that's all.
So what year were you born?
1916.
Amazing. So your birthday's coming up then pretty soon, I guess.
Yes, it is, in October.
Well, happy birthday in advance.
Well, it's a little ways off yet.
So 95.
I'm not rushing things.
You're not rushing things. You're going to be 96, right? Sound really great for somebody 95 years old. Nowadays, I guess 95 is maybe yesteryear 65. I don't know. Would that be true, you think?
Well, I owe it all to my mother. She lived to a ripe old age. She was 94 when she passed away. So I guess I got some of her genes in me.
Yeah, that's great, man. That's good news. So you said you're from Detroit. You've lived there all your life. I guess then you've seen a lot of changes in Detroit, huh?
Absolutely.
How far away are you from, like, I guess, the urban areas of Detroit?
Well, we live on Wattles and Burnley, and Wattles is actually, what is it, 17-mile road, which means that we're going due north from the center of the city of Detroit. We're 17 miles from the center of Detroit.
Okay. All right. So you're not really, I guess, in that more urban area where there's a lot of crime and everything.
No.
Okay.
No, that ends at about 8-mile road, and we're at about 17-mile road.
And I guess they made a movie called 8 Mile Road. I guess there's some significance
right.
to that. The person who was with you is a person I guess you live with, Madge
right.
Woodward.
We were both widowed after a long marriage. She for 60 years, Madge? 59 years, and I was married for 58 years. We are both bridge players, and we play duplicate bridge, and I met her over a bridge table about 6 years ago. And we got along very well together, so we've fell in love, and we've lived happily ever after.
That's great. Are you married, or you skipped that part of it?
Well, there's no sense in getting married at our age.
Hi, Madge. For the benefit of the listeners, just give them a little bit of background about who you are, where you were born, and so on and so forth, and what you've done in your life, and how old you are, if that's okay if I ask.
Okay, well, I was born in England and came to this country when I was 20 years old. And had a good marriage, had three children, and after they grew up, I became interested in learning Braille, which I did, and spent the next 19 years working with children who needed Braille in school, and I loved every minute of it. And I worked with a totally blind teacher who was really something to watch. So that's pretty much in a little capsule of what I've been doing, which I think was my best time.
What year did you come to the United States?
That was in 46.
You met a Yank over there and you came over?
Yes, he was flying missions over there and we met and we continued our corresponding for the next year. And then he returned to England and we were married there and came back. And he was a teacher, so he took a teaching job for a while, worked on his doctorate degree for a while, too, and ended up working for New Holland Machine Company. Anything more you'd like to know?
Yes, 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 of course. So you seem to like what they call flyboys, huh?
Flyboys.
Flyboys, like pilots, right? You have something for pilots.
I suppose they might have been called that at the time, yes.
Right, right. What attracted you to Braille?
Well, my third child was about to go off to college, and I had done quite a bit of volunteer work and found that got to be like some people weren't doing the most they could with their own lives. And so I saw this advertised in a community college. So I signed up for it, and it was really, really interesting, and it led me to a wonderful job for many years.
But I was wondering why you were attracted to the people who are blind.
Well, I guess I felt it seemed like something worthwhile. I could write children's books, which you had to do to be registered by the Library of Congress. So I thought, well, that's pretty worthwhile. I've always liked being around children, and books are a very important thing in anybody's life. And just the idea of having to memorize, which I'm not usually pretty good at, you know, how you have to memorize to put print into Braille and use contractions and that kind of thing. And it was different. Nobody else on my friends were doing it.
Right. It's not like a mainstream type of occupation.
Yeah, I guess it isn't. Oh, yes.
So you've seen America change over these many decades.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, yes, there have been many changes. The world, I guess, is so much better with computers in it, but I find them very frustrating at times. Mm. I'm just lucky enough to have a daughter who knows a lot about computers. So.
What's your view of where the country's going? Is it a positive one or a negative one?
I'm very, very disappointed in the way the country's going. I happen to be a Democrat. And I see the Republicans as just taking advantage of people who don't have as much as they should have.
Right.
I see our medical expenses going sky high without seeing much done about it.
Right.
I mean, I could quote you a couple of costs that we just had from our trip.
Right.
It was $1,700 to be transported in an ambulance that's going at the same speed as anybody else. It was not that much of an emergency. $1,700 for 11.1 miles. Now, that doesn't mean to say it ends up with me paying that kind of money, but the fact that
that's what they're billing.
That it could be written that way, it just boggles the mind.
Right. That's $154 a mile.
So, yeah, that's the way to look at it. Right. What would it be if it was a real emergency and they were racing down the road with all the sirens going?
300 a mile.
Well, you can see that she's a delight.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk about what happened to you just recently.
Okay.
In this article, it says that you're in San Diego Airport and you're
flying
back home to Michigan. When was this, Homer?
It was on March the 29th.
Why don't you set the stage for what happened for the listeners?
Well, we had been in Palm Springs for 2 months, and we were returning to Detroit. Our daughter happened to be vacationing at the same place, so they drove us to the San Diego airport, let us off, and we had pre-ordered some wheelchairs because walking around airports is not too easy for us. So we were in wheelchairs, and they took us to the security people. And the security people proceeded to process us through the screening device. And, of course, I set off the alarm because I have two replacement knees and Madge has replacement hips.
Right.
So they set us aside and told us to wait. And they would have somebody come up and someone go over Madge, pat her down, and somebody pat me down. When we were processing through, they asked us to put our clothes in these boxes that they have there at the airport. We had quite a few things. We were carrying on our carry-ons, and we had sweaters and jackets and stuff. So we filled two boxes each of our belongings. After we had done that, the official officer came up to me and says, "Do you have anything else in your pockets?" And I said, "Yes, I have some folding money." I said, "I put my money clip in the other boxes." So he told me, "Well, empty your pockets and put them in this other new container," which made a fifth container. So I put my money in the container with some Kleenex. Well, I hesitated at first. I said, "Do you really want me to put my money in there?" And I had about $300. So I did as I was told. And then, of course, he conducted us to the padding down session. After we were through with that, he said, "Well, I'd like to do a litmus test on your outer clothing." I don't know the reason for that. But anyway, he took a piece of paper or a sampler and ran it through a little contraption he had. And he said, "Well, you've got nitrates on you. We're going to have you pat it down again in a private room." Okay, so I go to the private room. They patted me down. In the meantime, I have to emphasize that we were away from our belongings. We're being processed through all these things, and our belongings were on a conveyor going in another direction.
Great.
So anyway, they patted me down in the other room. And by that time, we had consumed a lot of time. And we were getting close to our plane departure time because this process took anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour.
Jeez.
When I commented to them that I was getting very concerned about the time, the one official there who was the boss man, I guess, in charge, he says, well, are you objecting to any of this? And I says, no, I'm not objecting to it. I'll do whatever you want me to do. So at that, he says, well, put your hands in your pockets and see if you have anything in them. See if you have your money there, which I did. I had my jacket on, my pants, and I went through all my pockets and showed him that I had nothing in there. He says, well, take off your shoes. Took off my shoes again. This is the second time. He did the same thing with Madge. Take off your shoes and go through all her pockets. They went through all our carry-on stuff. They emptied every carry-on that we had, went through it item for item, and then told us that, okay, you can go. Well, then I got the rest of my things, and I said, well, where's my money? And they all gave me this blank look. They didn't know where my money was. So my money was gone, and by that time, we were getting very close to our departure time, and I told them I was getting very concerned. They said, oh, don't worry about it. We'll get this wheelchair person to cart us to the plane. Well, we both got back in our wheelchairs, and this fellow, he literally ran through the airport to get us to our airplane. And we had people scattering around as we ran through the airport, and we finally made it to the plane, and we were the last ones to board the plane.
Oh.
So I think the whole thing was a scam. The idea of all these pat-downs were to distract us and to keep us occupied so that we wouldn't be asking too many questions about where our money had gone. And I feel that the one person who was conducting all of this, he was kind of orchestrating the whole thing. He's the one that put us through the first screening and asked for the patting down and the nitrate testing and all that. He was kind of orchestrating the whole thing. In my opinion, he was probably trying to distract us so they had time to do whatever they were going to do. Well, anyway, they told me then that when I expressed my concern, they said, well, all this is on videotape, so don't worry. We'll find out what happened to your money. Can you get to Detroit? The TSA person there will have a complete report for you as to exactly what happened.
Okay.
So we get to the plane, we're on the plane. I told the flight attendant about the difficulties we'd had, and she says, well, I'll send a message to the TSA people in Detroit and let them know that you're on the plane and that you're going to be looking for them. She gets a message back from TSA, apparently, and came back and told us, well, there will be a TSA man waiting for you as you disembark from the plane. And by the way, this was Delta. And the flight attendant told us they would give us 5,000 air miles or $50, whichever we want for our inconvenience. Well, we elected to take the 5,000 air miles.
Right.
At any rate, we get to Detroit, we get off the plane, there's no TSA man, nobody knows anything about our plight. They put us back in our wheelchairs because we had signed up for that. And the guy starts going all over the airport looking for the manager of the TSA. It takes about an hour and a half before we find him.
Jeez.
So anyway, all this stress and humiliation that we were put through was just unbelievable. And you know, when I put my stuff in those containers, that was their responsibility to look after my things. They were no longer in my possession. They were in possession of the TSA people. And they did not take care of my possessions because my money was lost.
Right.
So at any rate, he got home, and I have a son, Bill Petty, who's a computer guy. He's very good at the stuff. I told him the whole story, and he took over for me and contacted all of the people at TSA in San Diego, contacted the customer service people, and as a matter of fact, contacted the manager of the TSA. I had written a complete report of what had happened to me. So they sent us a complaint form. So we filled it out, sent it back with my story. And my son has been in contact with them since then. And they have promised to investigate it, to look into it, and all that. But in the meantime, this transmittal that I prepared, we sent to different people who have responsibilities in different areas, like TSA, Delta, our House Representative Gary Peters, and to our two senators here in Michigan. Even President Obama, I have him on a list. So we sent the message all over. Of course, I'm concerned about the $300 that I lost, but more important than that, I don't want these people to think that they can get away with mistreating people like that. And if it sounds an alarm all over the country or wherever, that would make me happy to know that I've at least accomplished that. And I just wanted to bring that to as many people's attention as possible. We've had interviews by the local TV station. They put it on the TVs that evening as a result of all these things that we've been going through. My son tells me that we've had something like 101,000 hits on the computer, people who are concerned and have comments about what had happened to us. That's pretty much the story.
Okay. Yeah, this is a topic of great interest to people because, as you know, there have been plenty of news stories out there about people who work for the TSA getting caught stealing money, stealing computers, stealing whatever it is. It just happened the other day. Somebody got caught stealing something from somebody. It was in the paper the other day or online. These are people just like who would be employed anywhere else. Just because they work for this department of the government doesn't mean that they're going to be more forthright than other people. Especially with all the news, people have a right to fear that their belongings are going to be stolen, and yours, in fact, were. So you walked out of San Diego $300 lighter.
That's a figure that I came up with after thinking about what I had taken with me when I went to San Diego and how I had spent my money and things like that. And that may not be right on the nose at $300, but it's very close. If anything, it's lower than what I actually had on me.
Right, and the whole thing took about an hour?
Yeah.
And so the nitrite, you think, were from your nitroglycerin tablets?
Well, I don't see how that's possible because my nitroglycerin pills are in a very small capsule, and I had put those in the boxes. They were not on me, on my person, when they checked me. Those pills are in a little bottle that is sealed. So if they had something that detected nitrates, it must have been super, super sensitive. You know, that's
right.
That was just, I think, was part of the stalling process.
Right. Did they manhandle you? Did they violate you at all?
No, I didn't feel violated. It's just a regular search. They patted me all down, you know.
Matt, did you feel like you were manhandled inappropriately?
I thought it was appropriate, you know, knowing what security people ask of you. But because it was unusually overall, I did ask the female, I realize you really have to do this, but is this a normal procedure? She said, well, it's because of him. You see, because he was already going through a lot of pat-down.
Okay.
And that's all she said.
Okay.
What could I have done to deserve this much pat-down? It seemed out of reason.
Yeah. You got back to Detroit. Obviously, you said there was no guy there, which when you were telling the story, I had a feeling there was going to be no one there. There are a lot of lip service. Where does it sit now? You contacted everybody. Has anybody gotten back to you at all?
They haven't gotten back to us, but they promised that they would. And my son is on top of it. He's following through with everything. I've kind of more or less left it in his hands because he's a much younger person and he's a go-getter. He'll get to the bottom of things. He stays with it until he's completely satisfied.
Good. I mean, you're 95, but obviously you're very lucid, and I'm looking at a picture of you online, and you look really good, and I'm looking at a picture of Madge, and she looked really good also. But, you know, you don't look like the typical terrorist.
I don't think so.
No. That's the thing. If I was with the TSA, that probably would have tipped me off, but I guess they don't want to discriminate.
At one point during this whole process where they were telling me that this is routine and stuff, I said to them, yeah, you have to do routine things, but you've got eyes, haven't you? I mean, they can see me. I don't look like a terrorist. I don't have a background of a terrorist. Crazy.
Omer Petty and Madge Woodward, I want to thank you so much for the time you took out of your day explaining all this to the listeners. I'm sorry for what you went through, and I'm really looking forward to finding out how this case unfolds and looking forward to talking to you in the future when this finally gets to a resolution.
Well, my son predicts that it will be anywhere from 6 months to a year before this thing is resolved.
Again, I want to thank you so much for the time you took out, Omer.
Well, you're welcome.
Okay.
Thank you.
Madge, I want to thank you so much for the time you took out of your day explaining all this to the listeners.
I'm glad this is all out there. It's obvious that other people have had similar kind of experiences, so it needs to be known.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.